We're back on the Fan Morning Show. Sports at 590 Fan, Justin Cuthbert and Ailish Forfar braving the conditions here at Cafe Diplomatico.
It's getting colder, isn't it?
It seems to be getting colder.
What happened? How is this possible?
We did get to meet a loyal listener, Jonathan, who just came by, took a photo with us, tossed it up on the Twitter feed. Take a look. We are very accessible here in this corner.
We are very accessible. We invite. Come say hi.
Please come by.
He's here till 9. He can't get out of work.
No. He offered us a beer. I said, no, a bit early for that.
And I think Johnny. They're serving as of 2 minutes ago, which is very exciting.
Oh, yes.
There are a few more fans trickling in.
Does anyone have a beer yet?
I don't see any pints yet. Not just yet.
Honestly, the first person that gets a beer, we should bring them on the radio and just celebrate them.
I'll be, like, irrationally excited when I see that happening.
Oh, it's such an exciting time here at Cafe Dip. Do we have Jeff on the phone? Oh, Jeff Merrick.
Yo.
Host the Jeff Merrick Show, host the 32,000 podcast.
You guys are one of the cool. When I used to live in Toronto, this was, and I suspect it still is, one of the coolest places in the city.
Yeah, come
on by. And like
a
total historical landmark. Mm-hmm. When I was younger, Ailish and Justin, and making decisions that were a lot more fun, I would go there all the time.
Yeah.
And it's one of, like, I remember there was a guy by the name of Mike Filey, who was a Toronto historian, and I used to have him on the radio all the time. And one day we did, like, an entire big show on Cafe Diplomatico, and he mm-hmm. told me it was, like, I think it was, like, the first place in Toronto to have outdoor eating. I think it was, like, the first, like, outdoor patio eating establishment, I believe. And I met the owner once. What was his name? Rocco.
Rocco, he's here. We met Rocco.
Senior? Is he still with us? Because he was.
Maybe it's Rocco Jr.
Is it Rocco
Jr.? But
we
met a Rocco.
Mastrangelo.
It's Junior,
Mastrangelo.
Yeah. No, we're hearing here.
It's Junior?
It is Rocco Jr. here.
It's Rocco Jr.
Oh, man. I'm telling you, I have like all these amazing memories of that patio. The dip's awesome. And you guys are in like the coolest spot in Toronto. I'm envious.
We are the coolest spot in Toronto, and we know that Jeff Merrick, you know, has some influence, but I didn't know you had this strong of an influence because it was a little noisy in the 6 o'clock hour,
and
the noise
silent.
Is dissipating. So we can
they know that we have a big interview here.
We have no problem with our interview here with Jeff Merrick, host of the Jeff Merrick Show.
They're already bored. That's what it is. So like, oh, this guy. Oh, Merrick, born to be mild. This will be exciting.
That is far from the case. Okay, let's get into the Leafs here. Some bad news yesterday, obviously, with Morgan Rielly going on long-term injured reserve. It just sparks up the conversation over whether or not they should add a defenseman now or later or when they're going to add a defenseman because it seems like that is somewhat of an inevitability. Should this change the approach at all? I mean, you can't spend the Rielly money and still have the ability to bring Rielly back into the lineup in 4 to 6 weeks is not through until the end mm-hmm. of the season. So how do you think they should approach this latest bout of adversity today?
Well, I think, Justin, it's a continuation of the same. Like, they've been in the market for a defenseman for a while. They were in on Ethan Bear, and, you know, they did not want to give up the draft pick for mm-hmm. this year. You know, Elliot and I were talking about this yesterday. You know, it sounds like it was going to be the same two players, Ethan Bear and Lane Peterson, going to Toronto. I think Elliot mentioned, I think it was 3 contracts going the other way to Carolina. The holdup was on the draft pick. Dubas wasn't willing to let go of it. I mean, they basically don't have any draft picks this season anyway. They don't want to let one of them go. And that scotched the deal and ended up a Vancouver Canuck. So I think he's been in the market for a while now, looking for a defenseman. And I think the one, like, I don't think it's going to be a blockbuster. Like, don't expect anything like, oh, Erik Karlsson's a Maple Leaf, or, oh, they just picked up Jacob Chychrun. I don't think that's going to happen, to your point, Justin, about contracts and salary caps. But I think a lot of us are sort of circling the wagon, and I can already hear, you know, maybe some of the eyeballs rolling back, go, oh, another Sault Ste. Marie Greyhound, here we go.
Connor Timmins,
who's, you know, right-hand shot defenseman. You know, he's had a hard time with the hospital bracelet. You know, that's been the one issue with him. I mean, he was the reason in a lot of ways that the Colorado Avalanche got Darcy Kemper. And ended up winning the Stanley Cup with Darcy Kemper. The Kemper sweepstakes came down to 2 teams. It was the Avalanche and the Edmonton Oilers. They're both offering up a first-round pick, but we'll put it over the top was Colorado offered up Connor Timmins, and that was, you know, deemed by Arizona to be more valuable than the prospect that, and I don't know who it was, that that the Edmonton Oilers were offering up. But nonetheless, I mean, listen, there's they have a lot of knowledge, obviously, about Connor Timmins. He's a right-hand shot defenseman. Coming out of junior was a real good prospect. Again, injuries have really kind of derailed what was once a promising career, and he's still young. Like, he's only 24 years old. I think we're all sort of circling the wagons there. And under the umbrella of Jeffy gives you guys useless knowledge, he has one brown eye and one blue eye. Wow. I can still remember his draft year, and that's goodness. What one person told me. Here's your useless fact you can use on TV, dummy. He's got one blue eye and one. There is a name for that. I just don't know it off the top of my head. Yeah, one blue eye, one brown eye for Connor Timmins. There's your useless knowledge at the dip today.
Yeah, the more applicable fact, though, is the fact that he played for the Sioux.
He's Max Scherzer. Yeah.
This is a commitment to the bit here.
Oh, really?
Is it not? Like,
oh, okay.
Is it not a little eye-roll inducing to you that if anyone, anyone connected is connected to the Maple Leafs, is it not like, it's kind of laughable at this point, isn't it?
Well, I mean, it all depends. I mean, if you're getting the players that you want, I mean, you always want to get players that you have knowledge of, right? And, you know, Dubas hasn't been with the Greyhounds, obviously in a GM capacity for a lot of years, but he's still really close with Kyle Raftus, who runs the organization, who runs the team now. And so there's a lot of knowledge sharing that goes on there. And, you know, Dubas is still very much plugged in to that team and to, well, I mean, he's, you know, plugged into to all teams that you draw players from, but still, like, there's a real, like, a ton of institutional knowledge there, and there'd be a real, you know, understanding of, you know, who this player is and what his values are. But I get it. Like, people will look at this and go, another Greyhound? Like, if it happens, like, we're all sort of speculating here. I understand it. But, you know, what's the thing? Whether it's in business or in sports, you want to surround yourself with people that you know a lot about and maybe have relationships with as well. People that, you know, won't surprise you, and people that'll, that understand the program that you're running. I get it, but does it look a little bit strange that, you know, whichever Greyhound pops up on the market that the Toronto Maple Leafs are interested? I don't think that's 100% true, but... You know, it's more true than it's not. Let's just put it that way. So, yeah, it is a little bit, let's just say, interesting. How about that?
So, the Maple Leafs find themselves in a familiar position here. It looks like Boston's going to run away with the division. I know it's early, but it looks pretty clear that Boston is going to set the sort of standard here in the Atlantic Division. And that means they're in the chase position, or at least they're in a secondary position in the Atlantic Division. And guess what? The other team in the secondary position in the Atlantic is the Tampa Bay Lightning. I feel like with the injuries with Boston, you might have to readjust your expectations or readjust what your intentions are. And I think the intention should have been winning the division. But now, do you shift your focus almost so specific to the Tampa Bay Lightning once again? Like, if we're talking about an in-season addition, if we're talking about using the Muzzin money, should Game 7 or that series versus Tampa be the most instructive thing in that, how did we lose last time? Where did they have the advantage? Let's do something to try and counter that, because it looks like it's going to be Tampa once again.
I understand the thinking. I think we all do. And we look at that and say, okay, so you build your team to beat Tampa, get past that first round. But as any manager will tell you, you can't make decisions on your team just based on one opponent. Like, that's... It works when we're throwing it around on morning sports radio, but in the sort of the world of, okay, we're putting together a roster and a team here that's, you know, trying to be built for long term success. You can't really. I remember I asked Brad Treliving that about the Calgary Flames and the Edmonton Oilers, and how the Oilers, you know, by the end of that series, certainly not game one, but by the end of the series, like, the Oilers broke the Flames. Like, you could see it, right, Justin? Like, they were breaking the Flames, and then, you know, the couple of players left, and the team really got broken up in some ways. And I asked him about that. Like, in your back of your mind, are you thinking, I need to make a team that can beat the Oilers, because that's our kryptonite? Certainly, it's the goaltender's kryptonite. Like, the only team that Jacob Markstrom really struggles against is the Edmonton Oilers. And we talked to him, Elliot and I, when we were in Paris at the European Players Tour. And he's like, yeah, man, that still hangs on to me. And I got to get over that. that really you know, broke the goalie in some ways, and they got to get over the hump. And Treliving said, "You can't do that." He said, "I understand the logic, but you can't build your team just based on, well, we're probably going to play Tampa in the first round, so we need to build a team that can beat Tampa." I think that as much as we like to look at the Maple Leafs and say, you know, what can they add to that team to go deeper in the playoffs? This is still up to the Big Four, isn't it? Like, the, you can pick around the edges and
seems like
add
there's
this
no other
player.
Option.
Like that's it. Like, if it's Matthews, it's Marner, it's Nylander, it's Tavares, and it's whichever goaltender is the hottest. And you throw Morgan Riley into that mix as well. That's how far you're going to go. If those players perform, you should be fine. And I know that Tampa's frightening for all the obvious reasons, right? But this is, again, a team that's had bad luck, bad draws, certainly. But if I'm the Maple Leafs, like, I think about it this way. If you're the Maple Leafs, don't you want Tampa in the first round? Don't you? And just like, you know, don't you want to play Boston?
I mean, I don't want Boston. I might take my chances with Florida if they can get there, but it seems like it's going to be Tampa and then Boston. Mm-hmm. And that is as difficult of a path as you could possibly chart out.
I think that's what you want, though, if you're the Maple Leafs. I don't think you want a layup in the first round. I know you need any. I know if you're going to do anything, like, to your point, like, you're right. Like,
we're going to have to beat the best teams to win the Stanley Cup regardless, right?
Eventually, yeah.
Yeah, but like, I do believe there's going to be a snowballing thing a little bit. Like, there is a mental block here. I don't think there's any question about that. If you're around the Maple Leafs after they lost last year, you could see how, like, shattered they were. And if they get over that, if it's the opposite of that shattered feeling, I feel like things could snowball for them and they could stand up to a Boston team or at least have a better chance against a Boston team if you were able to get past the first round. But the situation is that it is. You can't change it. If it's going to be Tampa, it's going to be Tampa. And I just think, okay, why'd you lose that game? Why'd you lose that game seven? Well, it was a depth contribution because the stars canceled each other out. It was Nick Paul stepping up. So maybe they just need an impact guy in the middle six. Maybe that's the thing that they should be going after other than a defenseman. There's an argument for both. I might still lean the defenseman if it's the right defenseman, but I just feel biggest impact might be the way that they have to go to fill that Muzzin money.
See, I think psychologically they want Tampa. I really do. Like, you need to go back there. Just the same reason that if I'm the Calgary Flames, I want Edmonton. I want Edmonton early when I'm the healthiest. I need to get over that hump. Just like, you know, years ago, you know, when the Ottawa Senators were, like, every year the best team in the regular season, but they couldn't get past the Leaf hurdle. Like, the Ottawa, like, you don't run from them. You want them. You need, like, along the way. Like, when the Washington Capitals, like, did you not get the sense that when the Washington Capitals won the Stanley Cup, the series they had to have to, and I mean, it's a horrible cliche, but, you know, the dragon they needed to slay, like, they needed to get past Pittsburgh.
Undeniably,
they needed to get past that. So if you're
Leafs
the Maple
have multiple
Leafs,
dragons, though.
Oh, that's the
Leafs
thing too, right?
There's
a couple. To Ailish, your point. Yeah, there's a couple of ghosts here that they've summoned, and they're having a hard time getting rid of. Like, you're right. Like, there is the Tampa demon, and there's the Boston demon, and that's all their own making. Having said that, I think you want them if you're the Maple Leafs. I think you need to get past those hurdles, especially if you're the Maple Leafs, knowing how you've, you know, flamed out in the playoffs the last, you know, however many years now.
Certainly a lot of time before we have to make those discussions as relevant as we are.
No, I think we make them from day one in Toronto.
Well, we never stop, right?
What do we always say, Ailish? It's not an 82-game season in Toronto. It's 82 one-game seasons.
That's true.
That's what it is in Toronto.
So yesterday, Morgan Riley news. Nick Robertson back in the lineup, but also Wayne Simmonds on waivers again. Surprise to you, and is there a way that they do right by him and find a fit that isn't just him, you know, head down to the Marlies, and I don't think that's going to be the realistic end to his career.
I don't think it is either. You know, I'll tell you, I look at a game. It's funny you bring that up because I think they really want to do what's right for Wayne Simmonds here. And if they can find him another spot, I think they'll really try to do it. I'll tell you, you know, I don't know if you guys watched that Boston-Montreal game last night or Buffalo-Montreal game last night. But, you know, Arbor Jacki was, you know, scratched in the game. And Buffalo, who, you know, have probably kind of felt like they've been pushed around a little bit this season, certainly during the losing streak. They've been pushed around a lot. You know, they really bullied the Habs last night. Mm-hmm. And I think of those two teams specifically. One, Buffalo, who feels like there's probably been some sand kicked in their face, and Wayne Simmonds has been there before. And the Montreal Canadiens as well, who are looking at that game. And enough at the end of the game, you know, Skinner's last goal. I mean, it's a blowout. It's like, I think at that point it was 6-2, maybe 5. Anyway, it was a blowout, and there's like 5 minutes left, and there's a Buffalo power play, and they put out their first unit, and Skinner scores, and there's the obvious beaking between Gallagher and Skinner, because it's like, again, unwritten rule. You guys know this. Like, do you put out PP1 in a blowout game? Well, Donny Granato did last night, and even though these two teams don't play each other again until March, you get the sense that things are going to be spicy between these two just for that reason, and the fact that Buffalo really went out of their way to push Montreal around physically. I still think there's a place for Wayne Simmonds and players like Wayne Simmonds in the NHL. You can look at the Edmonton Oilers right now, and you know, one of the big differences right now, and I'm not saying that Edler caught McDavid because Evander Kane wasn't in the lineup, but these things didn't happen when Evander Kane was in the lineup. Like, they really feel his loss. I just wonder if, you know, now as we're starting, you know, getting into, everyone's at the quarter mark of the season here, and you know what's under the hood, if teams are starting to look at this and say, all right, I need a little bit of insulation, I need a little bit of protection here, I need someone that can make sure our guys don't get hurt. As more and more players, and listen, this is for 17 teams this week play four games. Like, that is always a recipe for injuries. If you're in the AHL on one of these teams, pack an extra suitcase when you hit the road. I think the Leafs, if they can, will try to find another home for Wayne Simmonds, and they've always demonstrated that they've wanted to do the right thing for him and do the right thing by him. I think they respect him as a veteran that way.
In stop and take notice news this week, Cale Makar became the fastest defenseman in history to 200 points. I tried to find the best way to like contextualize it, because it's like faster than Bobby Orr. Like, that speaks for itself. But this struck me was Patrice Bergeron just got to 1,000. We're talking about one of the greatest centers in the history of the game just got to 1,000 the same week that Makar got to 200, and Makar is still a baby. How do you best contextualize the accomplishment from Cale Makar?
So I look at Cale Makar and I say to myself, let me know if you guys let me know if you guys agree with this or disagree. If Connor McDavid were a defenseman, he'd be Cale Makar. Agree or disagree?
I agree. Maybe, yeah, I agree. I don't need to couch it. I agree.
Mm-hmm. Ailish, you with me or against me? You on Team Jeff on this one?
I'm on Team Justin.
You're on Team Justin and by proxy Team Jeff. So, I mean,
so reluctant to say that. What's the problem?
She's like sort of sheepish, like, okay, let's just get Merrick in and out. We get him off. We can get back to, you know, having some nice, you know, Americanos here at the dip. The thing about Cale Makar is, like, we look at new school players and new mold, and he's really it. And the one thing that always stuns me about Makar is how he sets traps in his own zone. Like, you can kind of see it coming a mile away, and players that try to approach him, like forecheckers, always fall into it. To me, there's no one better at setting traps in order to exit the zone better than Cale Makar. And as far as Patrice Bergeron goes, is there anyone in the league right now that when they leave the NHL, you could legitimately make a case that they should rename a trophy after than Patrice Bergeron? Like, if we're going to go through, like, one day we're going to go through this process of renaming, that's called ambient sound in the industry. you can make the case that they should rename the Selke the Bergeron. Mm-hmm. You know, and the thing about it is too, like, it's not as if he's just like licking the envelope and mailing it in, like end of the career, back nine, like all of it, shady side of the mountain, not the sunny side anymore. You can make the argument that he's still playing some of the best hockey we've ever seen. Like, he is not getting any worse at all. Like, you can almost make the argument that the older he gets, he's kind of getting better. Like, he's like one of the ultimate freaks in the NHL right now to me.
It will be like a shame when he walks away, because it will be premature.
It will be, no matter. You're right. And no one would blame him. Like, the things that his body's gone through, like that Chicago final with the, you know, punctured lung and ribs and, like, oh, my goodness. And the years ago, the Randy Jones hit against Philadelphia and everything that he's put his body. You could understand if Bergeron says, you know, thanks, I'd like to be able to play with my kids and tie my shoes one day. But he still seems to be getting better. Like, as much as we talk about Nico Hischier and, oh, he's entered the Selke chat and all that, it's true. But no one's taking the Selke away from Patrice Bergeron as long as he's in the NHL. He's still that player. He's still that good. He's still amazing. And we talk about Crosby and Ovechkin and the Mount Rushmore of hockey and going right into the Hockey Hall of Fame. Bergeron's right there, too. Bergeron's right there, too.
Undoubtedly.
There's a funny, I'll tell you a quick funny story. Anthony Stewart told me the story that at the World Juniors, okay, Grand Forks, he said that, you know, they're all a bunch of goofballs. You know, their warm-up was like playing sewer ball, and they're all wearing, like, you know, baggy clothes and real loose team and all that. And he said, you know, Bergeron shows up, and he, like, looks like a pro. He's got, like, all the, like, the proper dry fits and all that showing up for warm-up and activation. He's got, like, the foam roller. And I think it might have been Brent Burns, or actually it might have been Stewie himself, just looks at him and went, uh-oh, here comes the Ken doll. And it's like, this guy, like, everything about him is like a total professional. He's been that way through his entire career.
I feel like they're not taking shots at him in Boston. I feel like that respect level is way, way, way beyond that now. Quickly, Jeff, because we've kept you too long.
Yeah, that's all right.
And we may be comparing them later this season anyway. How does Pete Carlson compare to current Cale Makar?
Wow. I mean, they're different. They're different defensemen. I have Erik Karlsson as a Hall of Famer. Erik Karlsson made the game look easy, right? Like, Cale Makar is like sudden bursts of speed. Like, I look at Makar, like I look at McDavid, and everything is sudden. Like, suddenly Cale Makar did this. Mm-hmm. Suddenly Cale Makar did that. Whereas Erik Karlsson almost glided through, you know, zone exits and zone entries, and just like had this elite level skill. And we think of the Hoffman play against the Boston Bruins. So they look and played like different players. Makar, when all is said and done, he has the potential clearly to be one of the best and probably in that top three with Bobby Orr and Nick Lidstrom. Actually, I put it the other way around. Nick Lidstrom and Bobby Orr. Probably, again, if it continues to trend like this, because no one's played D like this. No one looks like this, and no one piles up points like this. Like, he is the new age defenseman that everybody, like, you go to any rank around the GTA, all the defensemen, ask them, who's your favorite player? Cale Makar, Cale Makar, Cale Makar. And I think last year in the playoffs, where everybody got a real chance to see him and see how great he is, did a great service for him. And now all the forwards want to be McDavid and all the defensemen want to be Makar. He's become a sort of prototype now. But good luck. And it just proves how important skating is right now. But different styles. Like Carlson glided through everybody. Carlson was closer to Paul Coffey, you know, who would get a couple of or three strides and then glide through teams. I think explosion when I think of Cale Makar. That's the kind of defenseman he is.
Are your kids forwards or D?
I got a left winger and a right winger.
Who do they want to be, McDavid?
My oldest loves Marner, and my youngest loves Matthews. I think secretly he wants to be a center.
Good line mates there.
Yeah, no.
I like it. Jeff, appreciate you joining us this morning. Go Canada. Come down to Cafe Dip if you're not too busy.
Oh, yeah.
Doing
Dip's
all
awesome.
Your stuff today. Appreciate it. We'll talk with
you. Say hi to Rocco for me. I remember having a very, very brief conversation with his dad, but he was a lovely man.
All right, Jeff, talk soon. Thanks.
Be well.
Jeff Merrick hosts the Jeff Merrick Show, co-host 32 Thoughts podcast, friend of Rocco.
Mm-hmm. I want to be friends with Rocco.
Yeah, Rocco, come out here, man. All right, we got to go into something to chew on, which has to do with this. Brought to you by Great Canadian Meats.
Yum, yum, yum.
Jeff Merrick is involved in this chew, him and Sportsnet's Elliot Friedman on Monday's 32 Thoughts podcast. We've been talking about Canadian Ryan Reynolds possibly being interested in purchasing the Ottawa Senators. We saw him at a game not too long ago, an honorable attendee. He's certainly helping with the intrigue of this purchase, but they floated around another person, Canadian person, that might be interested as well. Let's play that clip.
I've just heard that Ryan Reynolds is taking at least one, if not more, meetings this week. The NHL sees Ryan Reynolds go on Jimmy Fallon and talk about wanting a sugar mummy or a sugar daddy and all the positive press that comes for that and says, we should actually turn this into a thing. And they are. But I've heard there's the potential to be more. And Ron made the joke and a couple of people started texting me, like, are you hinting that the weekend could buy into the Ottawa Senators? I don't know that that's going to happen. But, you know, the one thing about him, he's from Scarborough. He has some representation that has tie-ins to Ottawa. At least two of his representatives, well, they were born overseas and moved to Canada and have connections to Ottawa. So, you know, we'll see, Jeff. I don't know that it's true. I don't know that it isn't. But that rumor's out there.
Got a good old-fashioned celebrity bidding war
Seriously.
Happening.
I think they might partner up there.
I actually think that would probably mean, I don't think they can either be each other's sugar mama or daddy.
Who doesn't want a sugar mommy or daddy?
Well, if, you know, head down to Cafe Dip. We can talk.
I
think it's great. I think if they get either or both, I think it's the perfect storm for the Senators because the relevancy meter just goes off the charts.
Oh, my God.
I think Reynolds is the best case scenario, though.
Because how about Elliot being the weekend insider there?
Right? He was trying to find like the weekend's number, the weekend's representations number, or something like that. Like this is probably something he never thought when he was going into the NHL insider business that he'd be trying to hunt down the weekend's phone number.
I love it. I think that the more the merrier involved in this Ottawa Senators turnaround. Get all the celebs on board. It's certainly something to chew on.
I mean the party. Forget the games. Like the parties. The special events, the potential for that is definitely...
You know, if the Leafs are ever up, that Biebs would be all over it.
Biebs would need a whole group of sugar
Biebs
mommies.
Biebs is probably
and
worth a
daddies.
Lot of money.
He'd be in the same... I don't know. We don't have to talk about celebrity wealth, do we?
His net worth right now, $285 million.
I guess that would be more than Reynolds, I suppose.
Yeah.
Anyway, we can discuss that further. The potential future
Ryan Reynolds
here.
Is only 150. Only 150.
Only 150. So I guess he's got, Bieber's got Reynolds beat. That's for sure. Either way, it's going to take someone with big time pockets. And I'm sure after the Fallon, after these interviews, he's not going to have a shortage of sugar mamas and daddies.
That's enough
at
sugar.
His disposal.
Only sugar we're having is in our coffee here at Cafe Dip. All right. Our next guest is calling the game. The game of the day, Canada-Belgium, this afternoon, over in Qatar, calling in JP Delacamera, World Cup play-by-play announcer for Fox, joining us after the break. Today is hopefully going to be a national holiday moving forward. Mm-hmm. When the Canadians wipe the floor with Belgium.
The group's there for the taking after the Morocco-Croatia 1-1, or 0-0. Nil-nil, I should say. I got to get I got to get soccer brain going. Nil-nil, Croatia-Morocco meeting. Canada has a chance to take the group or the lead in the group, and we'll get JP Delacamera's opinion on that after the break.
Breaking down the top stories in the NHL every day. The Jeff Merrick Show. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Justin Cuthbert and Ailish Forfar live from Cafe Diplomatico. And we are going live to Doha with our next guest, JP Delacamera, World Cup play-by-play announcer for Fox. On the mic today for Canada-Belgium, on the mic yesterday for Argentina and Saudi Arabia. We're going to get to Canada and Belgium. We're going to ask extensively, exhaustively, we're going to go through that game. But first, JP, I got to ask you about Saudi Arabia beating Argentina. How in the world did that happen?
Well, I'm still recovering, I think, from that. That was, we called it one of the biggest upsets in World Cup history. It's certainly the biggest in modern day. Some other people mentioned the World Cup when the U.S. beat England decades ago. That would be up there for discussion, I guess. But that was a stunner yesterday. And I think that it gives nations like Canada a lot of optimism because I think that Saudi Arabia was able to win that game because they had a belief. They had a belief in themselves. They're not as good as Argentina on paper. nor on the field. Yet they beat them by the score of 2-1. So I think there's a belief there. I think the Canadians are a much better team than Saudi Arabia, and I see that same sense of belief under John Herdman in the Canadian side.
And Saudi Arabia claimed a national holiday because of it, so we're hopeful that that happens here as well. I know it wouldn't be the same level of an upset today, but you're right, the confidence level for teams that are looking as the underdog is certainly there. What would be the difference between Belgium and Canada if Canada can make this competitive or get a win today?
I'd be surprised if it's not competitive. This would not be a gigantic upset to me if Canada were to win or even get a draw. Yes, it's an upset for sure because Belgium's one of the best teams in the world and Canada's not close to that at this moment, but I think they can play with them. You know, I think that the Canadians are strong in goal with Borjan. Unlike some teams at this World Cup that are saying they don't have any strikers, the Canadians have two. They've got other good players around the field as well. The key to me will be that Belgium experience, the experience that Canada doesn't have. You know, when you look at the numbers, Belgium have six players over 100 caps. Canada have none. Hutchinson is the closest to that. That's a big advantage to me. There's two other players on Belgium that are close to 100, and they have 16 players that are back from a World Cup side that could have won the World Cup in 2018. So Belgium are the favorites, no question. But I'd be disappointed and surprised if Canada doesn't give them a good game. At the end of the night, if the Canadians end up with a draw or even a win, I won't say that I'm shocked. I won't.
Top spot in the group on the line because Morocco and Croatia drew 0-0 this morning. Does that result, do you think, change anything tactically for either Belgium or Canada? Will they be impacted at all by what we saw, or
no,
do the same game plan sort of suffice?
No, I think John Herdman, I've known John, you know, not up close and personal, but I dealt with John Herdman when he coached the women with New Zealand, even before Canada. He's very detailed, very organized, as you guys know. He's not going to change anything based on that first result. I mean, you can't prepare players one way and then, you know, the next day make a change. I don't think that's a good way to do business, I guess. So I think they're going to go out and try to get a result in this game. I don't think they're going to play risky. I don't think they're going to open themselves up to possibly giving up an early goal in the game. So I think that the game plan will be pretty tight. And if Canada can score first, I mean, that'll get people thinking for sure. But if they concede once to Belgium, the key would be to just keep it close because, you know, goal differential is the first tiebreaker. So that game yesterday with Saudi Arabia, people were saying Argentina's going to win by a 4-0 score, 5-0 score, and for Saudi Arabia, it was going to be a victory even if they lost 3-0 just because of the goal differential. When instead, you know, it all changed. But this is a great result for Canada because not only is this a tough group, but look at the first two games who they're playing. You know, so they get to play Belgium today, you know, one of the best teams in the world, and then they have to play Croatia. So had Croatia won that game, and they were certainly favored, you know, they have 3 points. If Canada were to lose today, they could be out of it, you know, pretty much by the second game. This gives them a lot of hope.
What will you need to see early from Canada to be convinced that they will be competitive against Belgium?
I think they have to show that the moment is not too big for them. You know, they haven't been here. It's different players, obviously. But, you know, there's a lot of pressure. I would think the Canadian nation is really backing them. And they're, you know, they're looking for something, right? I mean, Canada's not going to be satisfied by saying, well, we finally scored a goal in this World Cup. Or that we came here, we played three, we're three in and three out. They're coming here with a belief that they can advance. And I think that's what most teams do when you get to the stage. Maybe not some of the weaker ones. Maybe that's not realistic. But I give Canada a shot to advance. They're not favored. Belgium is favored, and so is Croatia. But I think Canada has to show in the early going. First 15 minutes for me are key. You know, if Belgium is having their way with Canada, it looks like Canada's nervous or disorganized or just not up for the big moment, then that could be a long day for Canada. But if that first 15 minutes, 0-0, 30 minutes, 0-0, you get to halftime and Canada's still in the game, Belgium will be the team because they've got all the pressure on them. Everyone's expecting Belgium to win. So Canada, in some ways, playing with house money.
this is the third time already that a CONCACAF team will draw a European side, and we've seen two draws already with Mexico and U.S. Getting decent results versus Poland and Wales, respectively. Do you find that those results are instructive or relevant at all to this game? I know Belgium's the best of the European teams we've laid out so far, but in qualifying, Canada was the best of the CONCACAF teams. So should that give them some a boost or a reassurance that they're in fact going to be competitive based on what we've seen already in the tournament?
I think Justin, you know, you're right on that. Based on what we've seen so far, like, you know, what can we expect now? Right, we always say there's going to be a shocker at the World Cup. There's always going to be an upset. We don't think it's going to be, you know, on the third day of the World Cup or on the first day of the World Cup. So we've had some upsets. We've had some surprising, I would say, 0-0 scores. But this is a different World Cup than others where it's hard to predict it, right? Because normally the Canadians would have tried to play against European teams to get ready for this. And in the same with other countries. If you're playing against a South American team and your European team, you try to play against them. But because of, you know, COVID and pushing everything back and having the World Cup be in the fall and winter instead of in the summer, you didn't have that chance. So the last time the Canadians played a European team was 2020. So you got to throw out some of those things. There's been no time to really prep for this. Players were playing in a Premier League game in some cases a week to 10 days ago, and now they're playing in a World Cup. You've got injuries to factor in. There's so many things. So I think that this is the World Cup where maybe there's going to be more upsets than in previous World Cups because of the differences that we're seeing in it. This might be the World Cup where somebody other than a European or South American nation wins it. I'm not going to make that prediction yet. But I do think we'll see a surprising team make a deep run, you know, whether it's from CONCACAF, Asia or Africa. I think somebody is going to get to at least the quarterfinal stage, whereas in the past, you wouldn't have expected that.
We're chatting with JP Delacamera, World Cup play-by-play announcer. He'll be on the call for Canada and Belgium on Fox later today. If Kevin De Bruyne is the best player on the pitch today, which is probably the consensus, does Canada have the second best in Alphonso Davies?
Man, I like Alphonso Davies. I mean, he's terrific, and he's actually a key, right? They're saying he's fit. So to me, if he's fit, he's starting, right? And he makes a difference. He's an impact player. So as big as De Bruyne is for Belgium, I would say Davies is even bigger for Canada because of the supporting cast. De Bruyne has a much better supporting cast, especially when everybody's healthy. They're dealing with injuries to Lukaku and Eden Hazard, but Alphonso Davies is a guy that can cause problems for anyone, whether it's Belgium or someone else. You know, they probably scouted him from his play in Germany with Bayern Munich, but, you know, he plays a different position with his club team than he does for the national team. But I think if Davies is healthy, they've got a much better shot at advancing. He's a terrific player, but who stops De Bruyne on the other side? We don't have Canada's starting lineup right now, so, you know, is it Piet? Is it someone else? Is it one player? Is it two? Can they take him out of the game? If you can take De Bruyne out of the game, you increase your chances for success.
So you're a big Davies fan, which who isn't? But who else has impressed you in your study of Canada leading up to the World Cup? And somebody might be Europe-bound, possibly, after the tournament is all said and done?
Wow. You know, I got to be honest. I've always liked Osorio. I know he's a free agent now. Doesn't look like he's going to be back with TFC, with Toronto. But I've always liked Osorio and Osorio's game. I hope he is healthy. I know he missed the end of the season. I do like David up top for sure. I like Alistair Johnston. I've seen him play quite a bit in Major League Soccer. He's certainly come a long way. But the guy I think that could make a difference, and I'm assuming he's starting, Tayshaun Buchanan. I'm a big fan of his from his days with the New England Revolution. I saw how he changed games, whether he was playing on the outside as a back or whether he was playing higher up as a midfielder. It's not just his speed. He knows what to do with that speed. He knows when to make the runs, how to be dynamic, and make the dummy runs to open up space for others. So, you know, it's disingenuous when somebody says he's fast or he's speedy. He's a lot more than that. And I think he's a player that could have a big World Cup, whether it's three games, four games, whatever that is, and then a bigger club will have him on their radar.
This is a very Canadian analyst take, but one of our Canadian analysts joined us last week, and he mentioned Atiba Hutchinson and said that he, in his opinion, was the most important player to any team at the entire tournament. He just thinks that his leadership and his importance in the midfield for Canada, which was not necessarily a sure thing because he's been dealing with so much injuries, was a real, real important thing, maybe the most important thing to Canada. It's probably a bit hyperbolized, but do you see the same thing where Atiba Hutchinson is immensely important to Canada and Canada's success today?
I think he is from a leadership standpoint. You know, whether he's healthy enough to start, I think Herdman just wants him here anyway, no matter what. I mean, he's been their leader for so long, and there were questions as to whether or not he would even make it here. I think just the fact that he's here training is huge for Canada. And if he starts, you know, even better with his experience. If you're Atiba Hutchinson, with all that he's seen and endured over the years, if he's starting, this moment won't be too big for him.
One of the goals I think a lot of us have here in Canada, it's been a long time since the Canadians were in the World Cup, obviously, since 86, and they were unable to get on the score sheet. Do you think that they can get over that hurdle and do what they couldn't do back then and you know, put one in the net in the next couple games?
Yeah, I think that they'll score for sure, and whoever does get that is part of Canadian history. So that's important. But I also think this, you know, people have said, like from a U.S. standpoint, like what's success for the U.S., right? Well, for the U.S., success is different than Canada because the U.S., with the exception of the last World Cup, have been used to going there, right? So, you know, what's a success for the U.S.? If they advance out of the group and they get to the knockout stage and they lose, to me, that's a success, right? If they were to not get out of the group, it's not a success, right? But how do you say it's not a success if you played like three really hard games and competitive games and you don't advance, but you were in every game? And I think that's the situation with Canada. Even if they didn't score a goal in this tournament, if they played three straight 0-0 draws, that tells me they're in every game. They could have won every game as well as, you know, losing them or drawing them. So I think for me, Canada has to be, and I think they will be, competitive. And then I think anything else is bonus, right? Anything else is gravy. If they get into the next round, how huge would that be for Canada?
Oh, we'd be having national holidays every day. I think it can even be argued that it's already a success for Canada, the World Cup, to have been to qualify here at the top of their group and CONCACAF and to be as successful as they've been over the last couple of years. I think you can say that's already a bit of success, but we're hungry for more. We got to ask you about the vibe in Qatar. Obviously, a lot of off-the-pitch things have happened leading up to this World Cup. There's been a lot of controversy, and we've seen the yurts and all of the stuff behind the scenes. What is the vibe around the World Cup there and the attendance levels, and are we seeing the real picture on social media?
Yeah, I can only tell you, you know, what I've seen. I haven't really seen anything. You know, I've read stuff about, you know, the beer sales and all that stuff. But, you know, I'm focusing on the games. You know, when I was at the stadium yesterday, I saw a sea of green and white, you know, fans from Saudi Arabia. I saw the blue and white of Argentina. I didn't see any issues, you know, going into the stadium. You know, none that I'm aware of. We're going there like 6 hours ahead of time. You know, so far our experience, my personal experience, has been okay here in Qatar. Weather's great, unlike it would have been like in the summertime, I would say. But everyone's interested in the games. And I think, I want to say maybe 4 days before this started, you didn't have that atmosphere here. I didn't see fans wearing the jerseys of their nations like I would in Russia, in Germany, wherever else, you know, the other World Cups have been, Brazil. Usually you see fans early, but I would say maybe 48 hours before the first game was played, you started to see more. My hotel was so many Ecuadorian fans, so much yellow here, and now we're starting to see it. So seen some Canadian fans out today. I'm sure we'll see them tonight at the stadium as well. I'm leaving in about 5 minutes just to get to the stadium because we don't know what traffic is going to be like there. Mm-hmm. So usually in the early going of a World Cup, better be safe than sorry. Mm-hmm. Go 6 hours early, hang out there, and, you know, see what happens. Time goes by quick.
We will let you go then, JP. But you said it. The call for Canada's first goal at a World Cup is going to live forever. So hopefully we see it today. Hopefully you have the opportunity to provide it. And hopefully we've got a good game here between Belgium and Canada. Enjoy the call. Hopefully we'll get to catch up with you down the road.
Yeah, anytime. I'm looking forward to it. I have all three Canada games in the group stage, so I'm excited about that.
Okay, you're getting that goal call for sure. We hope. We hope. Fingers crossed.
Yep.
JP, enjoy the call.
I'll get it eventually.
It didn't happen last time, so we'll hopefully it happens this time. Again, enjoy it, and thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
That was JP Dellacamera, World Cup play-by-play announcer for Fox, and he'll be on the call for Canada and Belgium. Now, he mentioned, Faisal Khamisa. A wild Faisal Khamisa has appeared. He mentioned that, you know, the drinking issues and all that stuff. I actually was filled in on a little note that some people have circumvented that issue by just staying on cruise ships. So people are out in the water, sleeping and lodging on cruise ships, and the rules don't apply. You can have all the drinks in the world if you're hanging out on a cruise ship. So that's, I think that is the best way to...
It's lawless out there.
That's the best way to visit Doha and Qatar in the World Cup right now is to hang out on the cruise ship. I will say, quickly, I saw a number last night that I didn't grab and should have grabbed. I'm a moron for not grabbing. We should have led the show with this. Alphonso Davies' anytime goal on Unibet yesterday was plus 1,300. It's down to plus 850. Anytime goal, though, for Alphonso Davies, still plus 850. If you're looking for any fun bet, any just $5 on Canada-Belgium, Davies to score, still at a high number. I know he's not necessarily the first option. Probably be Jonathan David. He's plus 300. But Davies, he might rise to the occasion. He's more of a forward-thinking player with Canada than he is with Bayern Munich. I feel like that's the play of the day.
Can I interest you on him first goal?
What's that?
Plus 2,400.
Wouldn't it make sense for him to get the first goal?
Yes, it would. And it would also make sense that maybe Canada comes out with something to prove and they get right in there.
That is the just $5.
And maybe Belgium knows that, hey, we're the second best team in the world. We don't have to.
If he starts, I guess.
Well, I feel like he's going to. Because John Herdman said yesterday, I got this quote written down somewhere. There was just no doubt in our mind. Let me read it. I don't think there was any doubt we were going to start him.
You made us doubt it because you again put all the smoke and mirrors out there.
Yeah, but there's the smoke and mirrors being removed.
But I'm glad to hear that. That's relieving. I'll be a little annoyed, a little grieved if he doesn't start after John Herdman said that.
He said,
but I feel
it's
like
a guarantee.
I feel like you could put that bet in right now because we should see Davies start. I don't know how long. Does he last the 90 minutes? I hope he does. But if we didn't see him, it'd be disappointing. And I feel like we can exhale now that he's fit and ready to go for Canada.
We're 5 minutes away from Germany and Japan kicking off here. They're doing the national anthems. We see Faisal Khamisa has entered the building. The sun is rising, so temperatures are slowly getting there. Still got that heater cooking, though. Cafe Dip starting to get a little filled up here. People are pouring in for that 8 a.m. game. Haven't seen a pint yet, though. We're on the pint watch.
No, we're on pint watch.
We're going to take a break, though.
During this game, the pints will get going.
I certainly think so.
The Germans are arriving.
All right, let's take a break. We're joined in person by Faisal Khamisa next, and then we've got a couple more guests to round out today's show live on location at Cafe Diplomatico. Come on down. Enjoy the rest of the show with us here. And until 1 o'clock, we'll be broadcasting live. And once again, there's a street event from noon until 9, live entertainment and prizes, Little Italy at College in Clinton, and Sportsnet 590 fan will be there taking it to you live on site. Take a break. We'll talk to Faisal on the Fan Morning Show. Sportsnet 590 The Fan.